You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, Wisconsinites are reading Sand County Almanac as part of a weekend tribute in honor of Wisconsin conservationist Alda Leopold. We'll hear about that.
But first, Wisconsin Public Radio's Assistant News Director Noah Ovshinsky joins us for our weekly look at what's making news around the state. Noah, welcome back.
It's good to be here. You know, it's our winter fun drive, you know.
What? Wait, what? I didn't get that memo.
That's at the top of the news.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll try to get on board now. Well, that is going on here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Some things going on around the state as well. What are some of the things going on in the state legislature now?
Right. So it wasn't a huge week for the news, but mm-hmm. there were some things that happened. A few things that I think are notable, certainly. The State Assembly Judiciary Committee held a hearing this week on a bill that eliminated something that I didn't even know existed, frankly, in the state of Wisconsin, which is the voluntary intoxication defense.
So, the obvious question, what is the voluntary intoxication defense?
Well, it turns out there is a state statute that allows someone to use the fact that they were drunk as an excuse for killing somebody. I mean, in effect, they're saying the alcohol prevented someone from knowing what was right and wrong.
Okay, that sounds like a weird law, but is this something that actually has made a difference in trials here in the state?
This is a defense that has been used and used successfully, at least on the part of the defense. The case that really brought this to attention of lawmakers, one of the reasons why they actually had the hearing this week, it involves a man named Brian Cooper, who was accused of killing and then raping a pregnant woman. He used the voluntary intoxication defense, and it ultimately resulted in a hung jury with two of the murder charges.
And so that got some people's attention, and it got it before the state legislature.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, at the hearing this week, the victim's families and friends were at the hearing and testified in support of the bill.
And the bill, in effect, would get rid of this, what people might consider a loophole.
Right. You can't say that you're drunk, and that can't be an excuse for committing some kind of crime, such as murder.
Would it affect that horrible case you just mentioned?
If this passes, it won't affect the case of Brian Cooper. Now, he is being retried by prosecutors because it was a hung jury. I believe that's just in a few months. And that's, of course, should he decide to use the defense again. He actually will be able to because the repeal, if the legislature does approve it, isn't retroactive. But, you know, all the supporters, you know, noted that, you know, this is to prevent something like this from ever happening again.
So this is just getting a hearing. It's late in the legislative session. Is this something that supporters are trying to get through still during the session?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think this is probably as a nonpartisan bill as you might mm-hmm. find these days. So we'll see how fast it moves.
All right. And then we had news from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I talked to Gil Halstead a little bit earlier. Oral arguments this week in the case involving the state's voter photo ID law.
Right. So there are two groups that are challenging this law. The League of Women Voters is arguing that the state really can't determine who can vote beyond what's, you know, explicitly said in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And there's another group also, the NAACP, is arguing that the law puts too high of a burden on somebody who wants to vote.
And these were originally, and I guess still are, two separate lawsuits, but ultimately the courts have rolled them in together. Do I have that right?
Exactly. They've been meshed together. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens. Of course, the state is arguing that the voter fraud threatens the integrity of elections and that the ID law is a way to fight that. The state also points out that in their view, at least, you know, there can be an ID law on the books because the Constitution doesn't explicitly forbid it. So it's kind of the opposite of the argument in a way that the League of Women Voters is making.
Now, this law was passed. It's been a few years now. It's been bouncing from court to court. It is not currently the law of the land when we go to Election Day if there are an election tomorrow.
Right. No. In the meantime, the law is on hold as it makes its way through the court. Mm-hmm. You know, that said, if the Supreme Court were to rule it constitutional or some parts of it, because, of course, they could do that as well. They could modify it. You know, and the legislature could come back and make changes. It is possible that it could be in effect for the election in November. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Would it be? I know when there are big changes like this, the elections board sometimes says, "Hey, we got to get the county clerks up to speed on this." How right. long or did, have they given a sense of how long it would take them to do that?
Well, it would be a huge burden on election officials. I mean, they say they will do it, but it will probably cost more money and it will take a huge effort. Now, all this being said, we're talking about the state Supreme Court.
Right. It's not that simple. There's down the street in Milwaukee, right, right. in federal court, there's another challenge.
Right. There is yet another case challenging the voter ID law. This one is in federal court, and that is still pending. The ruling could come down really, I think, at any time. Now, because we're talking about the federal court, even then, if a ruling does come down, that in of itself could be subject to appeal in the federal court system. So the law is being, you know, attacked on several fronts.
And we're not the only state dealing with this issue.
Absolutely not. This debate, this issue of voter ID is going on nationwide. And so really, regardless of what happens here in Wisconsin, you know, it is possible the U.S. Supreme Court will have the final say on this. It has to be said that the Supreme Court did rule on voter ID a few years ago in a case in Indiana. They ruled that Indiana's voter ID law was in fact constitutional, but that law was less restrictive than the one in Wisconsin and others found throughout the country. In Indiana, voters are allowed to sign basically a sworn statement at the polls if they don't have an ID.
And then there's that last wrinkle. Some state lawmakers on the assembly side had done something similar to that or tried to advance that.
Right, exactly. So the state assembly said, okay, if that was ruled constitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court, let's pass a similar bill to Indiana's here. The assembly has done that. The Senate has not.
They want to wait and see what the courts are doing.
Exactly. They want to wait to see what happens with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So very much an open question as far as the future of voter ID. But certainly this week, the fact that the two sides had their day in court, or the three sides, I should say, in court, you know, I think the issue is at least taking a small step forward as far as a result.
And then another ongoing saga here in Wisconsin, the iron mining up in the northern part of the state. What are the latest updates coming from up there?
Right. So there are some developments in, you know, this ongoing mining story. Really, it's been going on for a few years now. But Gogebic Taconite, which is the company who wants to open the iron ore mine in the Pinokies, they just finished 10 days of rock sampling up in the Pinoki Hills at the site of the proposed iron ore mine. And I only mention it because, you know, it's notable because of what didn't happen. Now, imagine there are, you know, dozens of trucks going back and forth with this rock, you know, these rock samples, you know, taking them down from the mining site. What's notable, I think, is that at least according to the Iron County Sheriff, there were no incidents with or tickets issued to people opposed to the mine. And there was certainly, you know, potential for trouble with so many trucks coming and going.
I'm guessing that's not going to be a sign that the opposition to the mine is done. There will still probably be protests and opposition in the weeks and months to come.
Of course. And this is just rock sampling. You know, this isn't even the officially mining yet. And so, you know, this issue is, you know, far from being resolved. And I think we'll see more protests certainly in the future, even though they may not have happened in the last 10 days.
And what's the next step now as far as GTAC, the mining company, goes?
Right. So according to a DNR official quoted by Mike Simonson in a recent story, GTAC now has some reclamation work to do. I think next week that reclamation work includes regrading the roads in the area. One can imagine what effect, you know, these trucks might have on the roads, given that they transported something like, 2,400 tons of rock. So GTAC has to go back and regrade those roads.
That's one of our big mining stories in Wisconsin. And later on in the show, we'll have reporter Rich Kramer on to talk about frac sand mining in the western part of the state.
Yeah, he'll be on the air talking about a change to a proposed law. And it really, what it does is it addresses the way that local governments can regulate frac sand mining.
All right. We'll look forward to that after 5:30. Noah, as always, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
That was our assistant news director at WPR, Noah Ovshinsky.